Halley was sent to the Cape of Good Hope to determine its longitude. He got it degrees wrong. He gave to Africa's noble Roman promontory a retroussé twist that would take the pride out of any Kaffir. We hear everlastingly of Halley's comet. It came back maybe. But, unless we look the matter up in contemporaneous records, we hear nothing of the Leonids, for instance. By the same methods as those by which Halley's comet was predicted, the Leonids were predicted. November, 1898, no Leonids. It was explained. They had been perturbed. They would appear in November, 1899. November, 1899, November, 1900, no Leonids. My notion of astronomic accuracy. Who could not be a prize marksman, if only his hits be recorded? As to Halley's comet, of 1910 everybody now swears he saw it. He has to perjure himself, otherwise he'd be accused of having no interest in great, inspiring things that he's never given any attention to. Regard this. That there never is a moment when there is not some comet in the sky. Virtually there is no year in which several new comets are not discovered, so plentiful are they. Luminous fleas on a vast black dog in popular impressions, there is no realization of the extent to which the solar system is flea-bitten. If a comet have not the orbit that astronomers have predicted perturbed. If like Halley's comet it be late even a year late perturbed. When a train is an hour late, we have small opinion of the predictions of timetables. When a comet's a year late, all we ask is that it be explained. We hear of the inflation and arrogance of astronomers. My own acceptance is not that they are imposing upon us, that they are requiting us. For many of us priests no longer function to give us seeming rapport with perfection, infallibility the positive absolute. Astronomers have stepped forward to fill a vacancy with quasi-phantomosity but, in our acceptance, with a higher approximation to substantiality than had the attenuations that preceded them. I should say, myself, that all that we call progress is not so much response to urge as it is response to a hiatus or if you want something to grow somewhere, dig out everything else in its area. So I have to accept that the positive assurances of astronomers are necessary to us, or the blunderings, evasions and disguises of astronomers would never be tolerated, that, given such latitude as they are permitted to take, they could not be very disastrously mistaken. Suppose the comet called Halley's had not appeared. Early in 1910, a far more important comet than the animic luminosity said to be Halley's, appeared. It was so brilliant that it was visible in daylight. The astronomers would have been saved anyway. If this other comet did not have the predicted orbit perturbation. If you're going to Coney Island, and predict there'll be a special kind of a pebble on the beach, I don't see how you can disgrace yourself. If some other pebble will do just as well because the feeble thing said to have been seen in 1910 was no more in accord with the sensational descriptions given out by astronomers in advance than is a pale pebble with a brick-red boulder. I predict that next Wednesday, a large Chinaman, in evening clothes, will cross Broadway, at 42nd Street, at 9 p.m. He doesn't, but a tubercular Jap in a sailor's uniform does cross Broadway, at 35th Street, Friday, at noon. Well, a Jap is a perturbed Chinaman, and clothes are clothes. I remember the terrifying predictions made by the honest and credulous astronomers, who must have been themselves hypnotized, or they could not have hypnotized the rest of us, in 1909. Wills were made. Human life might be swept from this planet. In quasi-existence, which is essentially Hibernian, that would be no reason why wills should not be made. The less excitable of us did expect at least some pretty good fireworks. I have to admit that it is said that, in New York, a light was seen in the sky. It was about as terrifying as the scratch of a match on the seat of some bridges half a mile away. It was not on time. Though I have heard that a faint nebulosity, which I did not see, myself, though I looked when I was told to look, was seen in the sky, it appeared several days after the time predicted. A hypnotized host of imbeciles of us, told to look up at the sky, we did like a lot of pointers hypnotized by a partridge. The effect. Almost everybody now swears that he saw Halley's Comet, and that it was a glorious spectacle. An interesting circumstance here is that seemingly we are trying to discredit astronomers because astronomers oppose us. That's not my impression. We shall be in the Brahmin caste of the Hell of the Baptists. Almost all our data, in some regiments of this procession, are observations by astronomers, few of them mere amateur astronomers. It is the system that opposes us. It is the system that is suppressing astronomers. I think we pity them in their captivity. Ours is not malice in a positive sense. It's chivalry somewhat. Unhappy astronomers looking out from high towers in which they are imprisoned, we appear upon the horizon. But, as I have said, our data do not relate to some especial other world. I mean very much what a savage upon an ocean island might vaguely think of in his speculations, not upon some other land, but complexes of continents and their phenomena, cities, factories in cities, means of communication. Now all the other savages would know of a few vessels sailing in their regular routes, passing this island in regularized periodicities. The tendency in these minds would be expression of the universal tendency toward positivism or completeness or conviction that these few regularized vessels constituted all. Now I think of some especial savage who suspects otherwise because he's very backward and unimaginative and insensible to the beautiful ideals of the others, not piously occupied, like the others, in bowing before impressive-looking sticks of wood, dishonestly taking time for his speculations, while the others are patriotically witch-finding. So the other higher and nobler savages know about the few regularized vessels, know when to expect them, have their periodicities all worked out, just about when vessels will pass, or eclipse each other, explaining that all vagaries were due to atmospheric conditions. They'd come out strong in explaining. You can't read a book upon savages without noting what resolute explainers they are. They'd say that all this mechanism was founded upon the mutual attraction of the vessels deduced from the fall of a monkey from a palm tree, or, if not that, that devils were pushing the vessels, something of the kind. Storms. Debris, not from these vessels, cast up by the waves. Disregarded. How can one think of something and something else, too? I'm in the state of mind of a savage who might find upon a shore, washed up by the same storm, buoyant parts of a piano and a paddle that was carved by cruder hands than his own, something light and summery from India, and a fur overcoat from Russia. Or all science, though approximating wider and wider, is attempt to conceive of India in terms of an ocean island, and of Russia in terms of India so interpreted. Though I am trying to think of Russia and India in worldwide terms, I cannot think that that, or the universalizing of the local, is cosmic purpose. The higher idealist is the positivist who tries to localize the universal, and is in accord with cosmic purpose, the superdogmatist of a local savage who can hold out, without a flurry of doubt, that a piano washed up on a beach is the trunk of a palm tree that a shark has bitten, leaving his teeth in it. So we fear for the soul of Dr. Gray, because he did not devote his whole life to that one stand that, whether possible or inconceivable, thousands of fishes had been cast from one bucket. So, unfortunately for myself, if salvation be desirable, I look out widely but amorphously, indefinitely, and heterogeneously. If I say I conceive of another world that is now in secret communication with certain esoteric inhabitants of this earth, I say I conceive of still other worlds that are trying to establish communication with all the inhabitants of this earth. I fit my notions to the data I find. That is supposed to be the right and logical and scientific thing to do, but it is no way to approximate to form, system, organization. Then I think I conceive of other worlds and vast structures that pass us by, within a few miles, without the slightest desire to communicate, quite as tramp vessels pass many islands without particularizing one from another. Then I think I have data of a vast construction that has often come to this earth, dipped into an ocean, submerged there a while, then going away. Why? I'm not absolutely sure. How would an Eskimo explain a vessel, sending ashore for coal, which is plentiful upon some Arctic beaches, though of unknown use to the natives, then sailing away, with no interest in the natives? a great difficulty in trying to understand vast constructions that show no interest in us. The notion that we must be interesting. I accept that, though we're usually avoided, probably for moral reasons, sometimes this earth has been visited by explorers. I think that the notion that there have been extra-mundane visitors to China, within what we call the historic period, will be only ordinarily absurd, when we come to that datum. I accept that some of the other worlds are of conditions very similar to our own. I think of others that are very different so that visitors from them could not live here without artificial adaptations. How some of them could breathe our attenuated air, if they came from a gelatinous atmosphere. Masks. The masks that have been found in ancient deposits. Most of them are of stone, and are said to have been ceremonial regalia of savages.